The following episode of Let's Eat In has been brought to you by Cane 5. Cane Vineyard and Winery supports Heritage Radio and the growing movement to change how Americans eat and how we think about our planet. For more information, visit www.cane5.com.
You're listening to Let's Eat In. I'm your host, Kathy Irway, and this is Heritage Radio Network here at Roberta's Pizza. It's the headquarters in Bushwick. Today, I'm really excited to talk with one of my food heroines of all time. Lucinda. Okay. Her name is Lucinda Scalaquin, and she is the executive food director at Martha Stewart Living. She is a co-host of Everyday Food, and she has her own show called Mad Hungry with Lucinda Scalaquin. It's on the Hallmark Channel every Wednesday at 11 a.m. There's also a book by the same name that just came out last year. Thanks so much for being here via telephone. Lucinda, are you there?
I am. Hi, Kathy. Hi. I'm really happy to be by phone, but I wish I was at Roberta's.
Well, I just saw your blog, actually, and I saw you made some delicious-looking pizzas, so... It sounds like you had a good dose of that.
That's true. That's true.
So, have you actually ever been here? Because I know you're.
I have in passing. Mm-hmm. I didn't spend enough time though. I was out on an odyssey to, you know, I had to hit a bunch of things out in Brooklyn, and I didn't really get to spend much time. But my old friend Gabe McMackin is hanging around there a lot.
Oh, that's right. He's one of the chefs, and he used to work on your show.
Gabe used to work with me here at Martha Stewart.
What a funny little small world connection there. Well, I'll tell him you said hi.
And yeah, please do.
Yeah, so I know that you must be incredibly busy with the show. Did you just finish airing a whole lot of episodes recently? Shooting,
yeah, I mean, the show... It debuted in September. It's actually on Monday through Friday, so that's 5 days a week.
Oh.
And what we do is we tape two a day in chunks of periods of time. So a couple weeks ago, we finished shooting, I think it's about 60 shows, and we're done until the beginning of the year. So, yeah, it's, you know, adding that in to everything else was hard. I mean, in the beginning, we were just seeing if it was going to work and seeing how people responded to it. And fortunately, it seems to have hit a chord, just that simple idea of gathering people around the dinner table that you want to hang out with and cooking fresh food. So that's really the essence of what the show's about. And so they picked it back up for 80 more shows that we start back up doing in January. So I'm having to... You know, maybe stop a few of the things I used to do. Of course, there's always great people around who can step up and do them. And because, you know, basically I kind of just wake up in the morning and do my deal at home with my family and my dogs, and then go to work and then come home. So I don't tend to be a workaholic, even though it sounds like I have a lot to do. I like the life part more than the work part.
I was gonna say, I mean, this is incredible. I mean, on top of the magazine and Everyday Food, how do you, because I know that you do cook a lot, and you spend a lot of time cooking at home.
Well, you know, that's the biggest thing, the job that my food director job that has grown immensely over the years. One of the biggest things is I never want to really be out of the kitchen, both at work or at home. So that's a challenge, because it's easier to, you know, just kind of overview everybody. I mean, first of all, we have so many talented people who work here, who work with me, and who have worked with me for a while. But, yeah, at home, I mean, I cook every day, because that's the way we like it. And I have a family of five, so I generally do a big dog walk in the park. I live here in the city, and then come back and get breakfast organized and any potential lunch, or start ahead on dinner things.
Hey, that's what I do.
Yeah, I mean, I know you probably agree. It's kind of what I've discovered over a lot of years of doing this is even something as simple as just getting the chicken in a marinade and trimming up the broccoli and washing the baked potatoes and poking them takes me that much further ahead when I get home. You know, normally, first of all, the shopping, right, which is, I know that I've got the food, but it seems like nothing, but, you know, taking 5 or 10 minutes off the evening routine is huge, I think. That's, like, I'm not a big fan of, like, you know, 30-minute this or hurry up and do this. I think more that we need to chunk out our time in order to achieve the eating at home is the best way I think about doing it.
So that's a good tip. Whenever you're in the kitchen, think about when you're going to be there next and what you might have to do or could do.
Exactly. And sometimes if you live with somebody, you could engage them. So if, like this morning, for example, the two chickens, you know, I've got five people, so I have to do two chickens, but I get it all organized with a little note on the fridge, like if anybody who's able-bodied comes home before I do, then can you get the chicken in the oven at this temperature?
That's great.
And I'm always thinking, and then, you know, but before we're, you know, when we even start eating that, I'm going to be wondering what's happening the next day. And, you know, so I'm always one step ahead of it, and, I mean, I enjoy eating out at times, but I prefer eating at home, which is a bit of a novel concept in many ways here in New York City. I mean, I know you wrote a whole book on the subject, and of course I found your blog because I was so fascinated by somebody who was actually taking a stand in favor of eating in, because it's not always easy, you know?
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. It can be, though. I think that you're living proof here. Even when surrounded by food, or maybe even because you're surrounded by food, it's a joy, and it's
that's true. Yeah. I mean, for my day job, I'm expected to go out a lot, and I try to do it at lunchtime when I'm at work. But there's still pretty much no meal I wouldn't rather be having at home, no matter how simple. I am a frugal person by nature. I can't help it, and I just like being at home, and I also think it's cooking simply at home is not hard. And well, one thing's for sure, I just categorically don't believe in fast food and processed food. So even if I didn't care about cooking, I wouldn't want to eat that, and I don't want the people that I feed to eat that. Although here in New York City, obviously in all the boroughs, we have so many options, like delicious, you know, street food and all kinds of things like that. You know, and my own kids, they definitely partake, but I noticed that they love to come home and eat, and they love to, if they smell something cooking, they're drawn, you know, back in, and they also realize that if they eat at home, then they will have like $10 more in their pocket for something else.
Exactly. That's so true. And have you gotten your boys to start cooking too themselves?
From the beginning, I enjoy the little ones in the kitchen, like my nieces who are quite young there and there with me, but, you know, I'm not like, oh, my son goes to the cheese shop and picks out, you know, there's a lot of people that like to brag foodie status with their kids.
I never
really did that, but when they get to a certain age, and it's later than you'd think. For instance, my oldest son was about 15 or 16 in high school, and he wanted more allowance, and I was like not about to do that because we were on a very slim ship. So I said, okay, if you want more allowance, then you need to contribute, and the biggest deal that we have going here is dinner every night for five people. So if you can cook the meal once a week, which means you have to give me a shopping list, you have to cook it, you have to clean it up, then I will raise your allowance. And I think it was an eye-opener for him because he thought he would just get into the swing of cooking what he was used to eating, which, by the way, wasn't too complicated or fancy. But then the first day we did this, he put his hand out and he said, is this a clove of garlic? And it was a head of garlic. I thought, oh, man, the basics of what you need to learn. So I said, okay, I'm going to put some time in with you. And so I walked him through over the weeks some of the standards in the house. It might just be a tomato sauce, how you roast a chicken, you know, pork chop, whatever. And so it was great in the sense that he learned to cook. He learned to cook, and he also understood what it meant to cook. And he went off to college and within 6 months couldn't really deal with the dorm food or anything. And, again, he's not like a snobby, fancy foodie guy. He just wanted – He also wanted to feed himself and his friends and do so tasty. And so that one totally cooks. And then my middle son, he has worked for, when he was 16 years old, school wasn't like the most agreeable thing for him. So he went and started working in a professional kitchen.
Wow.
And has, you know, did so for about 2.5 years at La Bernardin in New York City, and trial by fire. He So he's a professional, and then the young one is just about at the age right now where the others were really starting, and he actually said to me the other day, what was I having him do? Oh, I was just having him whip some cream by hand because I didn't feel like dealing with the blender, and he looked at me and goes, you know, it's time I learned how to cook. And I said, yeah, it is. Now's the time. Just so we'll start in with him. But, you know, they all, so it's proof. I feel like they're old enough for me to believe now that I practiced it with them younger. They liked it and want to recreate it, and two of them do it now. And I love the idea, they're all boys, I love the idea that I'm sending three sons out into the world who can cook. That makes me really happy.
Mm-hmm, definitely, in the city too. I mean, born and raised.
Yeah, I think it's important. I laugh when I say, look, if you can cook, great. If you can dance, forget about it. And if you can give a massage, you are going to be a full-service individual.
Now go to medical school. No.
Go to medical school, and the sky's the limit.
Oh, that is great. Congrats. I can't imagine what your Thanksgiving spread must have looked like then.
Oh, gosh.
Collaboration?
You know what? I was just saying, because my husband said, well, the biggest thing we did is we had a taste-off, because I do my turkey outside on the Weber, although this year I graduated to the big green egg.
Oh,
So we did one, instead of a giant bird, we did one in the egg and one in the oven, and then we did a taste-off.
Okay.
But the older I get, and this is probably maybe the 20th or 30th Thanksgiving I've cooked, and that's just at home, because, of course, in my day job, we do Thanksgiving six
sure.
months before Thanksgiving in the test kitchen, so
sure.
I've been around a lot of turkeys. But what my husband was saying, wow, things were really great this year. And what I did this year is I really pare back on any extra seasonings. Like one of the kids said, oh, God, how did you make this cranberry sauce? It's amazing. And I said,
nothing.
Well, it's probably the first year that I just used, beautiful, organic, picked cranberries with just the right amount of sugar and water and salt, period. So you really just tasted cranberry.
That's great.
So in the past, I've had multiple side dishes, and I really pared it down to, I did something I thought was really cool with my sweet potatoes, and they all were like, why didn't you leave the sweet potatoes plain? They're so delicious on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, they're right, because I really appreciate more and more the absolute pure flavors of the food, especially when they're all ganged up on a plate, you know, and you have that tart cranberry, and then you have a sweet, soft sweet potato, and it's, I was saying that the older I get, the more I like to pare down any superfluous seasoning. Like my apple pie wanted to taste like apple, not like spices.
Right. Yeah, you know, now that I think about it, Thanksgiving meal is really like a bunch of extreme flavors. It's tart, cranberry, sweet, candied yams, and, savory gravy, and it's just
exactly.
Like,
so you don't need to be like adding, you know, people go through these crazy recipes, and it's like, no, I had this epiphany this Thanksgiving, like, pare it away to just what you need to do to bring out the essence of that one thing. And then all together on the plate, you have an unbelievable mosaic.
Right. I remember this year my dad wanted to try adding sour cream to the potatoes. I just said, no. Let's just take it easy.
I was chastised because I didn't put mashed potatoes on the table this year. And I said, no, I'm on a boycott because they're a pain in the butt and I don't want them. And you've got everything else here. And they were like, well, don't try it again.
It's hard. I can't imagine. I mean, I've only cooked, like, myself four Thanksgiving meals. I can imagine. And I've already, like, oh, what can I do next different? I can't imagine how many times you've thought that, too.
And especially here at the test kitchens, because, you know, the magazine, Martha Stewart Living Magazine is, you know, 15 years old. 15
yeah.
or 20,
and
anyway.
Every November.
It's 20. Jesus, 20 years old. So that's 20 Thanksgivings.
Happy birthday.
And 20 times you're asking yourself, what are readers going to want to learn from us? What? Mm. I mean, we know they want pies. We know you're going to have to do a bird. But then what? How? That's why I found it really interesting this year. I decided, usually I do about a 24-pound bird, and I decided to do these two separate birds, which was good for my household because everybody likes the wings and the legs and the dark meat. So it worked out well.
That's a good idea. Not too much bulk, yeah.
Yeah, and we really did some tasting, and, you know, really. And then it's funny because, you know, on my radio show, Eat Drink, we did this holiday roundtable for Thanksgiving, and people called in. I can't tell you, Kathy, how many people called in to say that their favorite way to cook turkey is in a bag, which I've never done before.
What kind of bag?
Well, there's like this turkey bag that you get at the supermarket, and they're like, oh, it's the juiciest turkey, but I can't imagine that the skin is crust, you know, is golden. Anyway, that's going to be the next thing that I investigate, because if so many people love their turkey in a bag, there must be something going on for it.
Well, it sounds like it could be endless, then, how to cook the turkey.
Yeah, I mean, last year we actually spatchcocked the turkey. We took the backbone out and just pressed it down, and it cooked in 70 minutes. So to cook a bird in an hour and 10 minutes, that's pretty darn good for somebody who wants to try something different, you know.
Sounds like it might be a little steamy, too, like with the bag. I don't know.
Yeah, and then we were having a lot of conversations about, like, to brine or not to brine, and people were saying, well, why would you ever brine? And I said, I think I like to recommend brining to someone who's never cooked a turkey before, because I think it gives you a little leeway in terms of moistness in that breast if you screw up on the cooking time.
Definitely. Well, let's talk about the leftovers, if we may, in a little bit. But I picked out a song because I just saw an episode from your last Mad Hungry where you made meatloaf. So here's a meatloaf song. We'll be right back in a moment.
Well, I remember that little thing as if it happened only yesterday.
All right, and we're back after a little short meatloaf interlude. Do check out the meatloaf episode on Mad Hungry. That's my guest, the host of that show, Lucinda Scala-Quinn, and this is Let's Eat In. I'm your host, Kathy Irway. And Lucinda, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, we got a friend who just jumped on, Darren Bresnitz, producer, one of the producers on your show, and also a host of the next show here on Heritage called Snacky Tunes.
Oh, Darren, how are you?
Good. How are you, Lucinda?
Excellent. Darren's been having to edit this stuff.
It's been
probably sick of looking at me, right?
Oh, it's been nothing but a joy. I've had a time getting to meet and eat with your family in the edit bay.
Yeah, that's true. We just did a Christmas special that was, you know, that we pulled together, bringing. Oh my God! My mother, my brothers, and one of my kids in from different burgs. It was. It was kind of intense.
It was great. You know, I actually took Mad Hungry home with me for Thanksgiving and cooked some of the recipes with my mom. We made the cream spinach and the vegetable, the side dish that you made for Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah, that charbroiled eggplant, tomato, and zucchini. How'd that work out?
It went over very well. I think, you know, it was one of those dishes that everyone was surprised about what it started out as and then what it turned into.
You got to cook that long enough. That's the thing I always tell people, because then you get all the moisture out of those vegetables, and then it just caramelizes in the olive oil, and that's when it starts tasting amazing.
I told my mom, I said, look, Lucinda said just press it down and put it back in the oven. You'll see what happens.
Also, I got a lot of emails about that cream spinach. People saying, oh, my God, I didn't know how easy it was, because cream spinach, I love cream spinach, and it is so easy.
Spinach and cream, right?
There's no cream.
Oh, bechamel, yum. Okay.
Yeah, bechamel with some, well, sometimes I even put Parmesan in the bechamel, but mostly just a bechamel. And the key, though, for me is like when you steam that spinach before you fold it into a bechamel, the spinach should still have, like, you know, some texture to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and
so
my mom
quickly toss it at the end.
My mom guessed that secret ingredient of nutmeg before I even put it in.
Yeah, I mean, if, you know, ooh, people are, I remember when I first got on to to that dish is my, actually it was my grandmother who used to put that Stouffer's cream spinach when we would go visit her, and she would make us eat it, and at first I hated it, and then I started loving it, and then when I got older, I was like, okay, I want to make that myself without the Stouffer's part.
So I'm sure you probably get this a lot, and I do too, and I don't know. I know my answer to it, but what would you say is your cooking style, or your food style, sorry, culinary, any, like, cuisine that you adhere to?
I guess for me, no matter what discipline I'm in, it's like maximum flavor for minimum fuss. I'm a big flavor cook. Like, I like... I just like the robust savoriness of, you know, fat and spice, and just as much appreciate a poached, you know, gently poached something. But I'm a real minimalist. I think, again, the longer I've been doing this, which is, you know, a long, long time, 30 years, I like to only leave the essential flavors in something. So I'm always telling young cooks here where I work, it's like knowing what to leave out is really challenging. Like easy, like truly delicious, simple or easy to cook food is very hard to make because you have to know what to leave out. So it's like like Picasso mastered anatomy before he ever, you know, made a drawing with four strokes in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of my sweet spot, and why it works well on Mad Hungry, because people are looking to find recipes that they can relate to, that aren't just easy to execute on, but have such a big flavor that you've absolutely got to make it again, because the people that have been eating with you just remember it and they love it. And
yeah.
And so, I mean, I cook from all kinds of disciplines. I'm a very curious. I mean, I'm Italian on one side, so of course I cook a lot of Italian. But I like to study and cook from all kinds of cookbooks, mm-hmm. which I do mostly on weekends. Like I'll go deep into somebody like a Claudia Rodin book or Diana Kennedy or something like that. The rest of the time, I'm just cooking, you know, and trying to get it done in the period of time that I have and enjoy it and make it taste good.
Right. And sounds like the bold flavors, that's just, you know, that's a universal thing. It's the best of all worlds, I think.
Yeah, I think, my book, the book Mad Hungry is Feeding Men and Boys, because I have all, you know, I have a husband and sons and brothers. And one of the things to keep the guys, like, around the table engaged and interested, you're not giving them like a steamed piece of fish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's fine, but you need big flavor.
Right.
And
right.
Then they're interested. And I learned from that. And of course, it's not just men that love that big flavor. It's, I like the extremes.
Definitely.
And what I think most people can appreciate about is not just about men and boys. I would say it's also for those who are busy, because there are many times when, you know, you come home 7, 8 o'clock at night and you want a hearty and full tasting meal, and the thing about your cookbook and your food is that you can get that without it being 2 or 3 hours in the kitchen.
Yeah, that's true. Thank you for pointing that out. I'm always trying to, again, go, okay, can I make this? Can it taste just as good? And can I do it in half the time?
And without it being that semi-homemade type of thing.
Oh, yeah.
With it being like a fully cooked meal from scratch most of the time.
Yeah, that's a prerequisite. I like to start with fresh ingredients and end up with something delicious. So,
yeah.
and be realistic about how we can achieve it. That's so true.
Yeah, being realistic. I think that's a good point, because I see a lot of people my age, peers, trying to get into cooking because they're inspired and see a lot of, it's kind of a crafty trend.
It so is. Oh my
gosh. But
what
I love about your food, it's so real. It's homespun. Not to say that it's not like worthy of a restaurant, but
No, I totally know what you mean.
Yeah, but I feel a lot of people are being informed by what they see in restaurants. So they're kind of like, oh, you know, how do I make these, whipped potato something underneath my...
Yeah,
this. Oh, it's so true. It's like, oh, how can I faux sous vide and then make sure that I layer it with the... And I always say, like, why are you biting off more than you can chew?
Mm-hmm.
You oven roast some vegetables with olive oil, salt, and pepper, and just throw in, you know, one herb and some whole garlic cloves. You're going to blow someone's mind. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you're going to blow someone's mind.
No, I have to agree. I think so many people are just not even accustomed, especially in New York, to like a home-cooked meal that where you go, this was really simple to make, and everyone goes, you're Julia Child.
Exactly. It's you know, and there I can't tell you how many times you know, I hear that and I think to myself, wow. But then I'll watch a lot of food television and I'll see something that looks interesting to me, but I'll think to myself, oh, the poor person that's going to try to cook that. Or even in the test kitchens at Martha Stewart, I'm talking to the young cooks all the time. Really? Do you think someone has that pan at home? Do you think they have a dishwasher?
Yeah.
Pans are a good point.
Or
yeah.
even
you
more
know,
than
can
two
Can you
burners.
Do all those two things? And then a lot of the young cooking school grads try to convince me that I'm just, that I don't really know. Mm. You know, no, you got to sear it off. And I'm like, no, you don't.
No.
You really don't.
I mean, I think one of the things about your cooking process as well is that you really try and minimize the cleanup as well. You know, when you did your short ribs and you said, look, brown it in here, use one pot, you know.
Just yeah. Everything has to happen in one pot. I'm always thinking like that. Or even like my husband was helping me get everything ready for Thanksgiving, and I asked him to pick the ends off the beans.
Mm-hmm.
He goes and starts to get up two pots. And I said, whoa, back up the truck. No, he goes and gets two bowls. I said, get the pan that's going to be the final pan you're cooking in. That's where the beans, once they've been picked, go in.
Yep.
And leave behind the picked part in the bag that the beans come in.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, my God, that's a great strategy. And I just started laughing. I was like, no, that's called one less bowl that you're about to go dirty that I have to watch.
Dishwashing is you know, a sacrifice. So, yeah. Can I ask one last question?
Sure.
I know you dedicate a whole book and show to cooking for men and boys, but what would you make for to really seduce a man?
Oh.
It's my favorite question. I have to ask it to every guest.
Well, I have a theory, and I write about it in my book, that men love pie.
Oh.
I think men love pie. And
I think they do, too.
One time I was writing my book, and I was listening to David Letterman, and he I heard him say...
Darren is cracking up for some reason. Maybe he's...
Why, he hates pie?
No, I absolutely love pie.
Okay,
but
good.
It's just, it's like, of all the things I could think of, like, it's... I guess, yeah, the right place to start.
Well, anyway, David Letterman said, and I actually quoted it in the book, because he said, you know, it takes a pretty good cake to equal pie.
Ooh, that is so...
And I thought, he's so true. And, like, my husband wants apple pie for his birthday, period. My first boyfriend, well, not really my first, my second boyfriend in college, he was born in June, and I made a strawberry rhubarb pie for his birthday once, and I just thought that his eyes were rolling back in his head like he never had anything like it in his life. And I, every year that we were together, I made it for him, and it made me realize that he was like, there was something about that pie, and because you have to master a few things anyway. So,
yep.
I'd seduce with pie, and if I couldn't seduce with pie, I'd probably seduce with like a kick-ass pan-seared steak.
Okay, now I'm thinking of an all-pie menu with a pot pie, and then a mini pie for appetizer, and then a pie for dessert.
Oh yeah, don't forget I have these pocket pies in my in my book also. And then the other thing is, I have two people are pastry phobic, and there's this awesome pastry, which is cream cheese. It's made with cream cheese and butter, and the cream cheese gives it this pliability so that anybody can roll this dough out.
Oh, I never thought of that.
So
cool.
Lay a pie on the one you want to love you, and you will get them. I'm telling you will get them.
All right. I like that. Thank you so much for that invaluable tip.
It's delicious. That popped
well, I'm glad
up in
that
the...
someone in, I'm glad that the gentleman in the studio agrees.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I love those little chicken pot pies that you made. I think you made that for
I call those pocket pies. That was my railing against. I guess this is Heritage Radio, so I can be
you can rail. You can go
a
off.
Little looser, yeah. Right? Because the kids came home one day and they wanted me to make these things called Hot Pockets, and I didn't really know what they were, and I went to the grocery store. They cost like a fortune for something that these kids would eat in one bite, and I didn't even know half the ingredients. And I thought, okay, I get that they want convenience, but I'm making these at home. I just started calling them pocket pies and keeping them in the freezer, and so I was acknowledging that they wanted kind of convenience food, but made it homemade, and that's what Darren's talking about.
Yeah, they're good. It's the freezer-friendly episode. Check it out.
Yep,
Hallmark.
Exactly.
All right, I can't wait to see that one. And what's your next episode going to be? I think it says
I don't even know because now they have new shows at 11 and then there's another show that runs at 11:30. There's just, you never know. The hits just keep on coming.
All right. Well, just definitely check that out. Check out Lucinda's blog too. It's great. MadHungryLSQ.blogspot.com. You're on Twitter.
No, just go to MadHungry.com. Okay. You'll get to it.
Okay. You'll figure it out. Thank you so much, Lucinda, for coming on air.
Nice to talk to you, Kathy. I hope to see you soon, and thanks a lot for saying hi, Darren.
Oh, of course. It's been a pleasure.
All right.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. And that's our show. We'll be back next week. I'm your host, Kathy Irway, and this is Darren, and thanks to Jack and Nat in the controller booth.